Joining me this morning by phone is U.S. Representative Rick Crawford, who represents Arkansas's 1st Congressional District. Good morning.
Hey, Mark.
Good to have you with us. As we all know, and we've just been listening on NPR a few minutes ago, they were talking about the healthcare.gov website. We, of course, know it was plagued with technical problems and has been since it launched. But we're hearing it's running a little bit better each day. But then we've heard the stories about cancellation notices. And I know you and other Republicans, of course, have said that this represents exactly what you've been saying all along about this healthcare law.
Well, that's true, and I'll tell you something that came to light yesterday, and I'll get to the cancellations in a minute, but the chief tech advisor for the administration, or for CMS, actually, I think it's the chief information officer, indicated in a hearing in Energy and Commerce that they still had to build 70% of the website to make it functional. There's no way in the world they're going to meet that deadline of December 1st, And again, the question remains that because the payout method was flawed, then were there ever really any legitimate enrollments in Obamacare, number one? Number two, the problem that we were anticipating and that we've been talking about for well over a year is the fact that most of these enrollments were enrolling in the Medicaid expansion. And that's problematic, too, and that's going to create more pressure on the states. And so it's just been just one thing right after the other, and I've been advocating for some time that, look, we ought to back up, regroup, at the very least delay this thing, and of course now there's an indication that the president knew at least 6 months in advance that the rollout wasn't ready, that the website wasn't going to be functioning properly, and yet went forward with it, and that's unfortunate, but we're seeing the evidence, as you indicated, with the cancellations of policies and so on. And I think people are being hurt by it.
Well, supporters of the law say, and there still are some, say that any major reform to the status quo is going to have some difficulties at the start, just like Social Security and Medicare when they started. But you fix problems that arise, and eventually it'll be accepted, just as accepted as those programs are now, and everyone says they want to protect.
Well, I would have to disagree with that. I mean, I understand that, you know, it's easy to look back at Social Security, you know, 80 years into it, and Medicare now almost 50 years into it. Both of those programs are facing bankruptcy. And so I'm not sure that we need to hold those up as a model of efficiency and compare those to the rollout. The bumpy rollout that Medicare experienced back in 1965 and possibly the same type of resistance that existed in the rollout of Social Security. I understand that when you have big change, there's probably going to be pushback and there may be some issues. But to compare this, it's apples and oranges, and to compare this and hold those programs up as models of efficiency when they're, because of our debt and because of the $1.3 trillion entitlement expansion, that puts even further pressure on those two programs. So I don't even think we ought to be discussing Social Security and Medicare in the context of Obamacare in terms of, you know, how efficient they are and how that we ought to aspire to the same model that those two programs are.
Well, a lot of people would hold these programs up and say, look, they have been efficient. If there are any problems with them, it's a problem with the way later Congresses have changed how those funds are used.
Now, and I won't argue with that at all. That's part of the problem, is that when you have these big giant programs like that, and then we see, you know, without any kind of fundamental spending controls underlying our budgeting process, then we see these programs that can create major problems, and they themselves become threatened because of the fact, and I've said this to you many, many times, that we don't have permanent spending controls in place to make Congress behave. And if we did, which I've been advocating for since before I got elected, if we could implement some permanent spending controls. One of the things that I'm trying for is a spending limitation amendment or a balanced budget amendment. The other, I've drafted legislation that would require a two-thirds majority vote to increase or expand entitlement spending or to create new entitlement spending. These are the kinds of things we need to put in place to protect programs like Social Security and Medicare. And had we had programs like that in place, I dare say we would have ever even come close to passing Obamacare.
Well, of course, as we said, we're hearing stories of people who've had their insurance canceled and are seeing higher premiums when they look in the marketplace. We're also hearing about some people who are finding better coverage at lower prices, and people who are eligible for subsidies help them pay for coverage. So you get kind of a mixed bag when you look at all the stories.
Well, you do, but those stories are obviously few and far between. And what we also heard this morning is that there are some carve-outs for the insurance companies that put the taxpayer even more on the hook to subsidize the insurance companies who may be potentially losing money on some of these programs that they're being forced to implement. So in just about every way and every turn, we see negative effects, and ultimately the taxpayer bears the burden of that. So we certainly need to back up and regroup, as I've suggested for the last 3 years, and take a new approach to this. I will not argue that we need to really focus a lot of attention and a lot of energy into addressing the costs of health care, but we don't want to threaten the delivery, the accessibility, and the quality of health care, and this law does all of that.
Well, looking at the arguments from the supporters of the health care law, that the health care law sets minimum basic standards for health coverage. Is it fair to blame the law or the president if the insurance companies would rather cancel policies than bring them up to basic minimum standards?
Yes, and here's why. Because what we're talking about, basic minimum standards, are a ridiculous one-size-fits-all notion. For example, got a friend in Jonesboro, 52 years old, 3 kids, they're adults. His wife has had a hysterectomy, and he gets a cancellation notice because his policy doesn't carry pediatrics and maternity. Now, these are folks who don't need either of those things. They are in a position to determine what meets their basic needs. The federal government does not need to intrude into the private lives of people to say, you have to carry this policy or you're going to pay a fine. There's the flaw in this, one of many, but that's one that has people pushing back in great number to say that, look, I'm not smart enough to figure out what my health care needs are. I need the federal government to determine that for me. And that's just unacceptable. And that's what's driving this. And they're using that model to force, younger, healthier people to pay for older, less healthy people. And again, this basic standard is a template that doesn't work for everybody. And it's not necessary for everybody. And ultimately, it costs more money.
Yeah, is there general agreement, though, that there were problems, insurance companies canceling people for getting sick, denying coverage for pre-existing conditions, kicking kids off your policy when they weren't able to get their own, lifetime caps on coverage, inadequate coverage? Were these real problems that needed to be fixed?
Absolutely, and they could have all been addressed in the context of free market solutions. In fact, they were. When the insurance companies, when this whole debate started, the insurance companies voluntarily began to offer coverage for children up to age, on the parents' policies up to age 26, that became a market dynamic. That was market-driven, and that's a good thing. The other thing is on pre-existing conditions. A lot of times, pre-existing conditions, the reason that you get an exclusion on a pre-existing condition is because of a lapse in creditable coverage. That's a huge issue going from one employer to the other, and that occurs frequently, and the only way you can bridge that gap in many cases is to pay the extremely expensive COBRA benefits to keep that creditable coverage while you're waiting for your next policy to kick in. We could address that in a couple of ways. One is portability between employers so that you actually own the policy and your employer doesn't. The employer could pay the premiums, could pay a portion of the premiums, could get some tax incentives to pay all of the premium for the employee. There's a number of things that could be done in the context of the free market to address that so that we don't see exclusions for pre-existing conditions. And then the other thing is, quite frankly, drive the cost down, create greater competition by opening up state-to-state marketplace that allows you to shop around. And I'm going to tell you right now, if you do that, you're going to see greater competition. And when you have greater competition, customer service improves. It always does. When customer service improves, the cost goes down because you've got more players in the marketplace. Everybody wins in a scenario like that. Certainly there's things we can address. All those valid points that you made can all be addressed with ideas like that.
Isn't that exactly what the Affordable Care Act is supposed to do, though, is create a marketplace to foster competition and create a pool of applicants for those marketplaces?
In fact, what it does, it actually shuts down one of the key marketplaces in the country. That's the individual marketplace, and forces people into an exchange to create an actuary base that can be easily manipulated. In fact, it is. And for this model to work, you'd almost require every citizen in the United States to be a part of that pool to make it actuarially sound. It's not working. The actuary base will not work on this. And because of the pre-existing condition component of this, that's incentivizing people to stay out until they absolutely need the coverage. And so you're going to see young people that they'll say, well, heck, I'll take the $95 fine and just stay out until I absolutely need it, because when I need it, it'll be there, and they can't do an exclusion on me. So there has to be some balance between, you know, kind of trying to force that and also recognizing that we do need to put some provisions and some safeguards in to prevent insurance companies from acting badly.
Well, the ACA was designed to try to address all these problems in one fell swoop, and you say that that's not working. If you could repeal Obamacare and start over, what would be the top priority for what needs fixing and how to address it?
Well, you know what, the health care advisory council that we put together in the first district, comprised of hospital administrators and physicians and a variety of health care professionals, there are some common themes there. One of those is tort reform. And that doesn't mean that we're not suggesting that you lose your right to seek redress of grievances in the court system. In fact, that's part of being an American. But there has to be some limits and some responsibilities. And right now, hospitals and doctors are providing or they're practicing defensive medicine that runs the cost up. So there's number one. Number two, the regulatory regime. For example, the RAC audits that hospitals face, where Medicare comes in and takes money away because they didn't dot the I or cross the T in the appropriate manner. And literally, it's costing millions of dollars to hospitals, and particularly in our critical access hospitals and hospitals like, for example, Baxter Regional, that has a Medicare population far exceeding the national average. They're near 70% Medicare population at Baxter Regional and Mountain Home. And so Medicare is very important to them. And when they have a RAC audit that comes in and takes away money that they had already reimbursed 2, 3, 4 years ago, that's just no way to run a hospital and no way to manage your expenses and so on. Right. So those are some things that we can look at to try and do a better job in delivering. And it's particularly punitive to rural areas like ours.
Well, just got a couple more issues to get to running out of time. Just a short time left in this year, in this congressional session. Let's look at some other issues. What can you get done before the end of the year? And let's look particularly at the farm bill. Is there hope for that?
Yeah, I'm really upbeat about the farm bill. The conference committee is working. I know the principals have a meeting scheduled today. I think we're going to see that the heat turned up there, and we certainly want to deliver by the end of the year on that. An agreement in principle. We're just hammering out some of the details, so I'm optimistic that we'll get that done. As you said, time is sort of dwindling down here, but on a positive note, I really see that the atmosphere has softened considerably since the shutdown, so that people are, you know, more willing and understand the need for, you know, to work together to get things done. So I think that we're seeing a sort of a change in the atmosphere appear that bodes well for getting things done.
That's good news. ASU ROTC programs, they said they were going to shut it down, got a reprieve for a year. So what happens a year from now?
Well, that's an important decision on the part of the Army there. ASU, I kind of made the joke, and it really wasn't much of a joke. It was actually true that ASU was on double secret probation. They had no idea they were being evaluated right. And what the metrics were for that evaluation. So when they found out there was closure scheduled, myself, Senator Bozeman, Senator Pryor, we went to work and got aggressive and really did everything we could to try and get the Army to explain their decision. They did. It made no sense at all. They recognized they were off base. There was no congressional consultation at all. ASU was not consulted. And so myself, Senators Bozeman and Pryor, and the ASU officials, we worked that very, very hard, and we came up with what we think is a very positive decision. And I have no doubt that whatever the metrics are applied, ASU has been able to deliver and deliver very well. Great tradition, a great program there, and we're going to continue to see that in place. We obviously got some hurdles in a year from now to try and clear, but it shouldn't be a problem, and we anticipate the program continuing at ASU.
So there was no clear, good explanation as to why it was picked for closure.
Absolutely not. I mean, this is the Army couldn't even state where this directive came from. It's handed down without any consultation of ASU or Congress. No real rationale given to why, but it was clear that what they were doing was reallocating resources to urban areas across the country.
Well, next week, we got about a minute left, so a little time here. Next week is, of course, Thanksgiving, and despite all our problems and disagreements, still a lot to be thankful for.
Oh, there absolutely is. You know, I was at home last week. My son brought home a paper, and he did a little, little artwork, you know, and you had to list some things what you're thankful for. And, you know, you get the usual things that he's thankful for, the Disney Channel or whatever. He's thankful for, his iPad or whatever. But the top of his list, without any kind of, we didn't prompt him or coach him on this, which was so impressive.
Right.
The top of his list was freedom. The next thing, hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
This is a young man, 8 years old, and so he's really kind of showing some great priorities there. And I know that there are kids all across the country and all across our district and across the state that I think they get it and they understand sometimes better than we do what we need to be thankful for.
All right. Well, we're looking forward to a good holiday season and wish you and your family well through it.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Rick Crawford is a U.S. representative representing the 1st Congressional District here in Arkansas, joining us from his office in Washington this morning. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU.